Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's awesome seeing so many familiar faces, but also so many new faces here. My name is Bob Lamont. I'm a partner with Clarkson Consulting. It's my honor to get us started this morning with this first panel. It's safe to say that, can you hear me okay? All right. It's safe to say that as a supply chain professional, we live in interesting times, right? Whether it's planning, procurement, inventory management, logistics, distribution. We're in a sustained sprint, just trying to keep pace with ever-evolving requirements. The only thing that we can count on is that tomorrow we're gonna need to do something differently, and it needs to be ready yesterday. Fair? All right, we're gonna talk through three important topics today, leveraging four esteemed colleagues. We're gonna save about 10 or 15 minutes at the end for some audience Q&A, so please, if you have questions, save those to the end. We'll absolutely get to those. But with that, let's go ahead and get started by meeting our panel. Barbara, I'll start with you.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Barbara Fitch, and I lead supply chain for Allogene Therapeutics, which is a biotech company focused on allogeneic CAR T therapies. Prior to that, I worked at Amgen for 15 years, and prior to that, I worked at GSK and Pfizer, all in supply chain related roles. So good morning, look forward to the discussion.
Franck.
Hello, everyone. Didn't introduce me. So my name is Franck Toussaint. I'm executive director of BSMA in Europe. Been active in life science supply chain for the last 20 years. So some experience to share as well.
Hello, my name is Stuart. I've got 1.5 years, I think probably the least amount of experience in life sciences, so you'll love to hear my insights. I had 25 years at Procter & Gamble and then 3 years at Estee Lauder. So all of that has been in supply chain, end-to-end roles. So I've loved coming across to join Illumina. Some of you know my predecessor, Kevin Peggles, but look forward to sharing some of our learnings here today.
Good morning. My name is Gene Schneller. I'm a faculty member at Arizona State University in the Carey School Supply Chain Management Department. We have 40 faculty members teaching various aspects of supply chain management, but I tend to focus on the healthcare industry, more on the device industry than what you guys do, but there are really interesting crossovers, so very happy to talk about those. Previous life, I was at Albany Medical College, Union College, and Duke University, teaching in various aspects.
Thank you. All right, so I mentioned three big topics. Supply chain resiliency, I know top of mind for everyone, talent, and sustainability. We'll get started with resiliency. So the world is a pretty volatile place, right? We have disruptions coming from every direction, and those disruptions represent risk. And unfortunately for everyone in this room, those risks have been realized. Our supply chains are exposed. We're vulnerable. We have to think about doing things differently to ensure that we're able to get life-saving and life-altering therapeutics to the people that need them most. Barbara, I'll start with you. What are we seeing or what are we doing at Allogene to help ensure that we're resilient in our supply chain operation?
Yes, yeah, thanks for the question. And I think like Devinder highlighted, the pandemic changed things and we can't take for granted, you know, supplier commitments and lead times. We experienced during 2020 multiple instances where on short notice we were told there was limited stock and they didn't know when we could get it back. And we were able to implement some key capabilities, which we still use today, that enabled us to keep production going in the midst of the pandemic. Some of those are really understanding our supply chain and understanding our suppliers' supply chains and where they have risk. And we've implemented a robust risk management process to understand the risk, document the mitigations we're taking, and tracking those through completion. The other thing is to get to know our suppliers, we instituted supplier questionnaires that were very detailed and much more detailed than we had used in the past to understand their process and systems as well as their assumptions so that we could align on that and that we plan to the most current thinking. And then lastly, we differentiated our safety stock based on lead time, price, shelf life, and supplier risk so that we could invest in more inventory where it made sense and then take opportunities to reduce inventory where we had less risk. And that's something that not only helped through the pandemic, but as production demand changes or forecast changes, that's enabled us to remain nimble and not overinvest in inventory. So that's more focused on the raw material side. I think as a whole, we're also looking at business continuity and what we can do from a resource perspective or other risks with our suppliers to put a business continuity program in place that's fit for purpose in the company that we have, which is a startup environment. So maybe more of a light touch business continuity plan, but certainly understanding the risks and proactively trying to mitigate those.
We'll just continue down the line. Front, what are we seeing in Europe with the clients that you interact with on a daily basis?
I think like there are many challenges around resiliency. Of course, it affects the whole value chain. So what I see in terms of trend is that it starts with the design, typically for the vaccines now. There is even resiliency by design. So the way vaccines are being developed, the way materials are selected, and the complexity of the product might be also considered really at the start. And also along the value chain, there are many challenges regarding raw material, typically the API. Now Europe is pushing to get APIs manufactured in Europe, but like there is a debate on that. So I'm currently chairing EU supply chain resiliency platform and a task force. And that comes also to sustainability approach we'll be talking about, and of course, all in link with risk analysis. So yeah, I would say that there are many, many challenges, and on top of that, you have to add a layer of regulation changes that might add complexities, but also opportunities. So that's a hot topic. I would say the global value chains have never been so much global the last years. And however, we'll look at a continental approach. So there is like a paradigm that we are seeing, like the way you need to manufacture products at a, I would say, affordable price for the patient. But in the meantime, you cannot source everything from Europe, otherwise it costs a lot. So a lot of paradigms are underway now, but typically resiliency is more and more important as well in Europe.
Yeah. So for those of you that don't know about Illumina, there's different business segments and therefore different supply chains that we operate. So we've got the challenge from a devices point of view, we make instruments that do the sequencing. So they can be anywhere from like tens of thousands up to over a million. You've got all the spare part network that you've got to have resiliency in to support those and keep those machines running. We've got a universe of 20,000 instruments scattered around the world, pretty much like all countries. And so we've got to reach pretty deep. We also have all the chemistry and consumables, so reagents and so forth to run the sequences and the library prep, the assays and so forth. Completely different beast. Then you've got services, and we're getting into more automated workflows. So the challenges of how to have resiliency across all those different segments has been very varied. Some of the things that you've heard here, we absolutely leverage. Right, supplier, building on some of those ideas around category strategies and supplier partnerships. Over the last 12 months, we've invested a lot into having better real-time supplier risk assessments, having those risk assessments to have visibility deeper into our supply base. So it can be easy to stand up the tier one type of supply assessments, but can you get into the tier two and the tier three, tier four assessments? We've had to strengthen our global trade compliance. So everyone agrees that regulations change pretty quickly. In our supply chain, we have about 900,000, soon to be 900 million, 900,000 shipping transactions. And so there are the transactions where we're moving stuff from an Illumina site to another Illumina site or out to our customers, but we're crossing a lot of borders. So with the changes in classifications with regulation, we've really had to invest. That means finding people. It's really hard to find people where you need them. So sometimes you've got to bend the rules a little bit and have people working in all parts of the world that have got the skills. But we've been able to build the digital capabilities as well as the organization. Leadership you need to be able to have a really strong compliance organization. One of the some of the other practical things. we're really good at firefighting. I'm not sure if you guys can relate to that, but we're super good at that. We try to discourage people being heroes, but the reality is, in supply chain, you're doing a lot of it. And so, as much as we've invested in really good systems, as much as we've invested in trying to understand and work with our supply base, when I came a year and a half ago, one of my first observations was the incredible complexity, both in bills of material, as well as like if I look at something like library prep, right, where you've got, it's hard to get high first pass yields on some of those products. And so I like making money. And so I had to work with marketing around, we have to actually simplify our portfolio. How are we going to get a bit sharper on where the pools of profit are, where the future revenue streams are going to come from, and be able to get sharper at what we're good at and where we've got the right to win? And so supply chain, we as leaders, we need to be at the table and to drive those discussions. And there's a really good amplifier effect when you can do that. It makes resiliency that much easier. I think I'm also fortunate, working at P&G and also Estee Lauder, they're companies where supply chain is like in the C-suite. And so the expectation that we have as leaders, I've enjoyed bringing that into Illumina and to really enhance the leadership we've got, the presence we've got, to be able to drive some of those like commercial decisions which you need for resiliency. I'm not going to pretend it's easy. I have the occasional heart attack each week as I wonder how the next miracle was solved and we've been able to have supply continuity. One of the areas that we're getting into, if you're interested, is we're trying to get more customer focused. So for 25 years, we've been innovating and we've been making things that the market wants. And so that's meant that we're focused on the product as the hero. And so we're now focusing on customer and what the customers are doing with our products and making that work the hero. And so the next evolution of resiliency here is going to come from Illumina having really deep strategic partners, understanding how to enable their workflows and what we need to do in our supply chain to ensure we're enhancing their resiliency. So I think that if you haven't got a resiliency framework, like get one. There's lots of them out there, and like everything I've learned in my career, common sense goes a heck of a long way. So being able to right size where you put your energy based on those risks is super important. But that's a bit about what Illumina is doing.
Thanks, that's great. About a year and a half ago, having criticized the strategic national stockpile, which I'm sure you all found helped you. Sorry, you can't make jokes in the morning. I was asked to develop a new research center on resilience, the supply chain resiliency initiative at Arizona State, and asked to figure out really what were the major problems facing resiliency. We had faced some early on. We have 100,000 students across our campuses. We began to develop our own test for COVID. And what did we find? We found we couldn't get nasal swabs. So we quickly were able to be agile. We were able to move quickly to a saliva-based test, and we're able to steal straws from various McDonald's to be able to get students to provide samples and do a new test, which shows that there's a great deal of agility, but it's interesting. We've now done over 1 million tests, and basically the major ingredient, I know Devendra talked about digitalization, we found it was leadership. Our president said, do whatever you can to make us survive. And it really wasn't about revenue, it's about survival. And we tend to see resiliency as really part of an organization surviving. And that's really important. So we're tending to look at a number of interesting issues, including leadership and policy and governance. But one of the areas we've looked at are common pool resources. How do you pool resources across various sectors to be able to make sure that products are available when you need them? The strategic national stockpile failed, but we think organizations in the bioscience industry should be thinking about what are the common pool resources that you can put together, how do you share those, and how do you develop a multi-continent set of pools to make sure that you can be able to respond in time. So we're trying to develop models for looking at common pool resources and sharing. Big observation, very little stickiness among many organizations in terms of, by the way, that's a big academic term, stickiness. Many of people are finding that the new normal is the old normal, and that really scares us. In the hospital industry, many of your customers, they've gone back to thinking that growth and revenue are the most important things, not preparedness. I basically have led the Defense Health Agency, Integration, Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines. They have preparedness in their mission statement. How many of your customers have preparedness in their mission statement? So it goes back again to leadership and governance. We're looking at real options. What should you do? And by the way, what shouldn't you do? What should you wait on? And so you may want common pools for some things, but other things are more accessible. And I think it means understanding your tier two, tier three suppliers and knowing what you can do to be able to do that. Real shoring, near shoring, all of the things that President Biden talked about that were really important, how are we doing on that? And we really don't have very good metrics. We're also trying to focus on implementation. One of the things we found is that many organizations during COVID were able to develop new products and policies, but they weren't able to implement them. In the clinical area, implementation science is a big deal. In supply chain, it's not a big deal. How do you implement that? How do you do change management? How do you get clinicians to change what they were doing before? So as you think about new products, we think we should be thinking about implementation. So we're working with companies in both life sciences on the device side, as well as areas we really hadn't thought about. Our center focuses on microprocessors. By the way, all those chips, all of those pacemakers, they're filled with microprocessors. And we're also really interested in agribusiness because that's what really keeps the system going. But we're also interested in electricity, power. I mean, that's the thing that keeps your plants going. If you're going to develop more, if you're going to manufacture more, you need to be able to do that. And now we're investing deeply in AI. We're the first university to do a contract with a major AI company, OpenAI. We are basically putting that across our entire infrastructure. And one of the first projects that our research center is looking at is really the FDA database. What can we learn out of that? But you guys know how many recalls there are every year. You know how many stockouts there are. How can we use AI to better perfect that database, learn from it, and then adjust what we're doing in manufacturing and positioning to become really much more resilient. And finally, I think the issue of contracting is interesting. So many of the plans that organizations had sat on the shelf. We have a decision theater where people can come together, talk about how to do those things, using AI and other kinds of machine learning to have really best strategies and practices.
Excellent. Thank you. Our second topic is sustainability, very closely linked with resiliency. Pressure's coming from everywhere, our stakeholders, our customers, our superiors, our children, to do things more responsibly. All of the things that we're talking about doing to be resilient, how do we do so in a manner that sort of gives back to, in a sustainable way to the planet? Gene, I know you have an opinion on this, so I'm gonna start with you and come back this way.
Well, I think there's several different aspects to sustainability. It's a word that we have several research centers on that. I'm really interested in workforce sustainability. Really what happened to workforce really during the pandemic. We are trying to focus on that. As many of you may know, the Veterans Administration now has a $24 billion RFP that we are part of to be able to look at workforce because they can't sustain their operations across the Veterans Administration. And so I think we're very narrow when we think about sustainability just as something that has to do with the environment. But the environment's piece is really important, but also organizational sustainability. And I think that's where it really links to the whole issue of resilience. By the way, if it's not in your budget, you're not going to do it. I want you to go back and think about that. If it's not in your budget, you're not going to get your investors to basically invest in it. And so you really need to go back to, I think what I was trying to point out before, the leadership and governance issue, and sustainability has to basically sit within that, and it has to be an organizational determinant.
Very good. When I first got into supply chain, I was taught that businesses have to decide what's more important, service or cost or cash or innovation. And now, like 30 years on, I think it's now become like you've got to do everything. You've got to do service, and you've got to do cash, and you've got to do cost, and you've got to do innovation, and you've got to do sustainability, and you've got to create a great environment for people to flourish. And so I think sustainability is just something that is truly integrated now into how we operate. I'm tremendously proud. When I joined Illumina, I was really, really proud of the ambitions they had. It was a very broad-based, a very integrated program of how we were going to contribute. Because if you're in the business of transforming human health, all right, how can you ignore transforming their environmental impact? It's just so synergistic. And so if I double-click on a supply chain element, a couple of things that I'm really proud of. We made a commitment that we were going to reduce our packaging. Now, I think in life sciences, you all can relate to packaging. Does anyone know about the cold chain? All right, yeah. The cold chain just equals packaging. And as much as we have innovative solutions, that some of which you'll see next door, there's still packaging is a challenge. And so one of the things that Illumina is doing now through its latest chemistries is leveraging innovation to allow us to ship ambient, right? And then store ambient and that ambition. That is now enabling us to stop using aeroplanes, right? 99% of the stuff we're shipping around is in a plane, and unlock that mode shift to ocean. And so we do have really, really high emissions reductions ambitions, and that's not going to happen unless I can get a lot of our consumables onto boats. Right. At the same time, with those 20,000 instruments that we try and keep operating every day, I need to get spare parts to those instruments like as soon as possible. But again, putting a spare part on a plane and parcel freight is a heck of a lot different to being able to have a good like multi-echelon type inventory strategy where you can have field service engineers with what they need when they need it without over-investing in inventory. And so these themes of how do you digitalize, how do you have the processes and that synchronization across your activities to enable you to do things in a sustainable way. Most recently, like last week, had a recommendation, saving a couple hundred thousand dollars simply by being able to have a slightly longer lead time to a customer, all right, but do it in a far more sustainable way. And the customer was happy. And so it was like, it was really a win-win, but it's like we trained ourselves to, we have to be fast, we have to be urgent instead of trying to synchronize our operations better. So common sense here in sustainability has gone a long way, but I know a lot of the life science companies, we're innovative companies, and we have to build that design for environment thinking or approach into how we operate. So we've also been doing a lot of work in scope 3 emission, how to report that, how to enable our suppliers to accelerate their journey. And so fortunately, we've got the resources to be able to accelerate that. But it's a lot of work, all right? It doesn't happen overnight. But it has allowed us to be able to relook at our networks. I'm not sure what your experience is, but we've got some really, really smart people in research and development, and some of them do think they know something about supply chain, and some of them do like to select suppliers. But we've had to collaborate with them and sort of get ahead of what they're trying to invent, and guide those. Guide those sourcing solutions to where we need them to be. And again, another critical part of our sustainability journey. So very proud of what we've done, but yeah, more than happy to share more examples. All right.
Yeah, from a European point of view, that might also like change a little bit because there is also legislation here regarding the corporate sustainability reporting directive that has come into effect, that is pushing also companies to go into this direction regarding 12 categories of aspects to consider. So that affects, I would say, most of the companies that have some commercial activities. And although there is like a report of 2 years, that will bring a lot of additional way of thinking and reporting and procedures internally. And that's a big change also for the industry, because that can affect the whole life cycle management. There is also some new EU legislation on the pharma industry that might impact how you build your whole value chain. And then it can impact also the types of suppliers you have, of course, the emission and the green aspect you might have. But that's really now a push from the legislator. Additionally to that, there are some new directives, like the project for the new EU packaging directive by 2030, that will also affect the reuse, the types of material you're using, and all the aspects. So currently, the industry is facing, I would say, great change. And then, of course, sustainability, I might consider a lot of aspects. What we see is that it also provide value. It can provide value, of course, in terms of environment, in terms of social and governance, also in terms of, I would say, bringing talents to your team, because that's the next topic, and also in terms of resilience. Sustainability is also a driver of difference, of competitivity for the companies. So we see also some that are taking advantage of that. But in the meantime, that will add also some complexities in terms of reporting and other things to be done. But that's really something to be considered. And that's not technically on one entity. That's really globalized. So it's aggregating regarding the different companies. So I would say most of the US companies that have operations in Europe will be affected by that. So that's something important. Yeah.
Thank you. Barbara.
And for Allogene, our aim is to reduce our environmental footprint. So my answer will focus on that aspect. There's many ways we do this, by being a good corporate citizen, through training, through small changes that add up, like composting, recycling, elimination of plastic bottles, minimizing our waste. But I think the biggest example is our manufacturing plant. It's called CellForge One. It's based in Newark, California, and it's where we make our CAR-T products. And that was a facility that was built from the ground up with the intention of efficiency and being mindful of the impact to the environment. And it's a beautiful facility. It received the LEED Gold Certification Award in 2022, and it is 100% electric and powered by renewable sources of solar and wind. And so that's a great example of providing, a beautiful place to work. It's highly effective and also environmentally friendly.
Awesome. So somebody has to do all of this stuff, right? Which brings us to our third topic, which is talent. The ability to acquire and retain top supply chain talent remains an issue in 2024. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce said that in 2024, the labor constraints are expected to continue across multiple industries, including the life sciences. And that's just getting them in the door. Once they're in the door, how do you keep them? Would love to hear from our panelists on things that we're doing to find new talent, and then once we get them in the door, how do we keep them? How do we keep them motivated, recognizing that burnout remains absolutely a thing that we have to navigate? I'll start with you, Barbara. I'm sorry.
All right. I'm incredibly passionate about talent development, and I think it's really important to invest time in getting to know your team, understand their motivations, their career goals, and to provide opportunities to increase both breadth of experience and depth of experience. And so having those conversations, I think, is really important. And understanding, as business drivers change, where you can marry those opportunities to provide additional experiences for the team. I think that results in increased engagement. It's better for the organization. And you have a well-rounded, stronger team at the end of the day. So I think it's really important that as the needs of the business change and as your employees change, to really invest in those relationships and continue to have those development conversations throughout the year.
What are we seeing in Europe?
Well, I think like the same challenges as we are seeing here in terms of, I would say, talent war, talent evolution, and also bringing talents to the industry. That's a topic also very important for Devendra. We had the opportunity to see it also in Africa, where we had a lot of students attending the conference. And so that's also by being at that types of conference, also being at universities to teach about the challenges, that it's really key. What I see is also a big challenge in terms of evolution of the skills, capabilities, because it's in constant evolution. So yeah, a lot of similarities as we are seeing it. But in the same time, you know, that's quite sometimes difficult to make companies evolve, or to have job description that are changing, or to have AI. So yeah, now AI has joined the workforce. So I would say like a lot of things to tackle on that. That's why with BSMA, we're also really proud to take this topic as a hot one. Yeah.
Thank you. Stuart, you're one of the larger employers in the San Diego area.
Yeah.
What are you doing to make magic happen there?
We haven't got as many employees this year as we had last year. We have had some workforce reductions. That's the reality of it, right? So I'll put that on the table. Talent attraction and talent retention need very different strategies, all right? And so talent attraction for companies like us that are going to be here for many, many years, we need to invest and leverage those partnerships with our local and best academic institutions. We need to be engaging at that level and helping create degrees and experiences that set them up so they can come into our business from day one and contribute. And so that's a long-term investment. Right, and so that involves, like in my case, going and speaking to classes, trying to open up what careers can look like, and start to build that trust and that dialogue. The numbers that we get in for internships and so forth, that varies and so forth, but we need to take more risk in getting the students involved in more meaningful projects, not just to observe. There's nothing to lose, and we're quickly seeing that they're bringing skill sets that people in this room haven't got, and so that's the exciting part. On the talent retention side, money that helps, paying people well. No, we want to have competitive compensation, and that varies. We have approaches in Illumina where we're trying to improve the term like employee value proposition. At the end of the day, it's an exchange of value. Each of you bring value to your workplace, and in exchange for that, all right, your workplace gives you something. And that something we've recognized is not just money, all right? Compensation's a huge part of it, but everyone's at a different stage of their life. And so building on one of the earlier comments about how to have that dialogue, my observations are that dialogue's not done very well. And sometimes what's in our people's heads is actually not what we think is there, and what they're going through and what their expectations are is not there. And sometimes we've got to help them make trade-offs, but we more than anything, we've got to help them see what opportunities are on the table. Illumina's been pretty functionally siloed. And so when I arrived, I didn't see a lot of exchange of people rotating between areas, but skill sets travel, all right? And again, being a slightly larger company, we've got the opportunity to have like supporting mechanisms in those situations. Last month, I took somebody that was in charge of talent management in HR and put them into a sourcing role, and they're thriving. It's incredible. All right, but I've got to say, it's more of an exception. It takes coordination and intentional leadership to start looking at succession planning and try and open up those opportunities. And you've got to make you've got to do things to make people feel safer. All right, that's easy to say, but how do you create that psychological safety where if they fail, it's on you, not on them? How do you give them the confidence and the safety net to be able to succeed in that place? So we're taking some risks. But I think that's what talent retention is going to be about. Having hard conversations as well. All right, if people have got aspirations to get to the next level and they genuinely are not going to succeed at that next level based on the way you've observed their capability, what are you doing to enable them? All right, we've done, some of you are familiar with StrengthsFinder, all right? And so there's many tools out there like StrengthsFinder, DISC, et cetera. But we as our leadership group, every single one of my associate directors and above, have done StrengthsFinder. We talk about it. We try and line up the work and the priorities in the business with people's strengths so they can actually play to their strengths. They end up contributing more, they're happier, the business gets a better result. Some of those really practical things really make a difference with retention. And so having an integrated approach, but one thing that I'd love to encourage you all to do is to figure out how should you be having that employee value proposition discussion with your people? Where are they at? What's on their mind? What are you doing well at? All right, which parts of the experience are you doing well at? Which parts of the experience of coming to work in your company would they like to see improved? It's pretty simple, but it really makes a difference. I'll share one more like bad story. This week I found out that I lost somebody, all right? Really good talent. And when I dug into it, I found out that they were disappointed with some of the things that were happening and they'd spoken to their manager about it. Their manager hadn't done anything, all right? And in a week's time, they're leaving the company. And I was so disappointed that if they'd had a good employee value proposition, that manager could have then reached out to other managers and come up with a plan to retain that person. All right. So I don't want to paint the picture that it's all perfect, but I just want to say that's the reality. That's the reality of it. All right. There you go. All right. And I've got some people here from Illuminic that can also give a round of applause for Illuminic. These people have to hold me accountable, so you can ask them if I'm telling the truth. No, that's right.
Yeah, let me build on that a little. We're finding that students who've worked from home for so long are not getting promoted, are finding themselves really with no relationship with their bosses and their employers. And so we're trying to teach students how to better manage their own careers and insist on engagement. And I think that's perhaps what happens is you have a supervisor who doesn't listen to someone. Mm. We're also trying to readjust how we listen to you guys. We need to learn much more about what your expectations are as we develop talent, and that will lead to better recruitment and retention. We've moved away from building new brick and mortar around big cohorts, but we're really focusing on what I would call stacked certificates. We're doing one on resilience, for example, right now. So we think that every graduate comes out of our business school, and we're the largest business school in the country at this point. Every student who comes out ought to have a certificate that has something to do with something special, whether it's business analytics, which is a big issue. Our analytics area has grown tremendously, and we think that provides added value to the student to be able to be retained. Secondly, in that area, the biggest thing we're trying to do is give students what Hemingway talked about as a great crap detector. By the way, that's what you want out of a good education, right, when you're using AI or whatever else. So that's really important because business analytics is really about figuring out when things are good and when things aren't good and when they work and when they don't work. The other thing we're trying to do is really re-engineer our environment. So we're using more virtual reality, and we have a virtual distribution center using, in a sense, virtual tools to be able to do that. So we're trying to give them basically the background to be able to be much more useful when they hit the ground and for you to want to retain them when they do get there.
Mm. I was getting the warning. Thank you. We have about 5 minutes or so, but before we open it up to the audience, can we just get a round of applause for our awesome? All right, so I have 5 minutes, and then you're giving me the hook? Okay. Questions? Anybody? Yes, please.
Thank you, guys. This was a great conversation. My name is Neeraj Chan from Boston Insights. We are a startup.
Microphone.
You're welcome to come up here.
Yeah. Can we turn on the middle mic up here? This one, the unused one? Or we have that?
Sorry.
Don't touch the mics. There
you go. Can everybody hear me now?
Yep.
I guess so. So thank you very much. This was all three valid topics. I've been in the industry for about 18 years. My name is Neeraj Shah, and I'm a founder of a startup called Boston Insights. We are disrupting, we have a solution for disruption in the clinical supply chain space. My question is based on my experience in the industry about what is the industry doing or what steps are you guys taking to motivate your talent to innovate? Because while we talk about AI, we talk about all these cool tools, I see very little innovation actually happening in the supply chain space. Yes, in the R&D side, there's a lot of research happening, there's a lot of investment happening, but when you see at the ground level, there's very little innovation happening. So what steps are companies like Illumina and Barbara, you're from Allogene, so what are you guys doing and what is academia doing? You shared some of that, but I'd love to hear what steps are you taking. Because in my experience, I'll tell you my story, when I was in the industry, there were a lot of ideas there, but if I wanted to take it, I had to cross so many hurdles to get it to that point. I said, you know what? Let me come out of the industry and do something.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's because it's confidential. We won't talk about it. No. It's I'll expose what we're doing. And I can share some examples from my peer companies as well. You get some of the companies that are larger than us that have special funding for like those innovative projects. And so you just put a business case together, it'll get it funded. I've seen some really exciting stuff from J&J as one example, where they had Deloitte doing some work on basically a chatbot. And so if you want to know where are my inventory reduction opportunities and what's the service risk or what's the value of that and where is it, the chatbot literally answers it. It's quite exciting to see the power of a question that we all grapple with all the time. So you've got examples like that in the companies that have got the resources to turn those things on really quickly. In Illumina specifically, one of the strategic bets that I've just rolled out, we came up with a cute little acronym called COIN, but it was about we need to build supply networks that are connected, orchestrated, and innovative networks. And so we're putting innovation in the middle of everything that we're doing. We have built a supply chain process excellence team. And so we used to have all these analysts that were scattered around different areas of the company. And so basically took the sort of radical decision to sort of pull them out of all the different teams and put them into one integrated end-to-end team. And so that's been a tremendous change to be able to get the focus around how do you drive the combination of process, organization, systems, people. And so the people in those roles, I was surprised by how much they enjoy just being able to come together and work together versus being fragmented. So in the old world, you had all the analytics being supported in a democratized way, but it was very fragmented, and now bringing that together has been a real unlock. The reality is we also, like, the prioritization is a big piece. And so we've got innovations from our ERP systems to how we do, I mean, everything, even down to like weights and dims. All right, there's innovation opportunities everywhere. It's not something that we talk about like in the press.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Does that answer your question, right? Okay, good.
Yeah, Barbara. Yeah, I think a similar flavor. Allogene is a company that is still in clinical phases. It's a startup company, so the funding isn't there that you may have at a big pharma. But most of us come from those larger companies, and so I think, you know, understand the concepts, and the way that we're looking at that is more, I would say, in process efficiency. So performing things collaboratively, cross-functionally, like Gemba walks is an example. Many of the team is here today that participated in one, looking at how we move materials from the warehouse into manufacturing, and what are some of the pain points for each group, and how can we walk the process and really see what we can do to make small changes that make a big impact. So doing things like that, Kaizens, and I think you know, one of the luxuries we have is we do work really well cross-functionally together because people do wear a lot of hats. And so a lot of that comes organically through conversation and collaboration. But with that continuous improvement mindset, with having dedicated walks, Kaizans and Gembas, I think that is driving results faster than we've seen in the past. And that's something that we are focusing on this year.
So in academia, we're doing more case competitions, particularly those we solicit from industry, and some around innovation particularly. Recently, there's been a funded case competition for innovation. Actually, Regina Hertzlinger from Harvard has sponsored that, has funded that, which is really great. You know, the other thing we're trying to do is get students to think from the bottom of the pyramid. We've always thought about adding more bells and whistles rather than adding value, and trying to get them, at least in case competitions, to think about value as they look at solutions rather than what's the next latest greatest thing. And I think there's a lot to learn from looking at that perspective.
Thank you guys.
Maybe in a few seconds, I think it's a very important topic. We recently studied also the number of supply chain patents in the pharma industry. We can release it with the BSMA community. And there are different strategies per companies. Even when I discussed with the former CEO of Merck Serono, it came from the top management to really have a lot of innovation along the supply chain processes to create a value stream also for the company so that they were innovating for other, even sometimes competitors. So it really depends from different categories of companies, but that can be also interesting on the fiscal aspect, like to patent a lot of things around the supply chain. But we see a lot of differences, and also regarding geographies, a lot of patents come from China as well. So the philosophy of patenting supply chain aspect along the value chain. So that's maybe something to consider. Yeah. Today I saw an article saying that innovation is sometimes like a buzzword to attract people, but there is not really innovation on the supply chain in some companies, so that's something to consider. Yeah.
Thank you. All right, the tough guy in the previous picture, the vendor's alter ego, has told me that my time is up. Yeah. So thank you everyone for joining. Yeah.
And because